Part 6, Chapter 8. Johnny stepped down into a different land. The barren mountain and its scrub seemed to swim in a soft mist. Everything was hazed and faintly blue. It seemed a very beautiful place, but it had dark gorges and inaccessible summits, and there was a secretness about it, as though its softness concealed a harsh threat. He had not realized a land could be so different from the bold mountains of his home. He had changed to buckskin. He hung a kill club on his belt.
"It's over there, about 5 miles,
said Turl, pointing south.
"Very rough terrain. Don't get any ideas about vanishing. There's a whole ocean and continent between you and your country. You'd never make it back."
He took out the control box and laid it on the seat behind him. He pointed at it.
"Could be that by tomorrow morning I'll come back and get you to move into the village, so don't move off."
"Tomorrow noon, I'll come down and collect 50 men my way. If you're still alive, duck under something to avoid the stun guns. Damned fool!"
"See you tomorrow morning,"
said Johnny, moving off.
"Goodbye, rat brain!"
Johnny found a faint trail that went south, and alternately running and walking, wove his way through the gullies and brush and barren fields. It was not a very promising land for food. He did not start any deer, but he saw an old trace of one. There was not much grazing to be had. Far off, on another mountain, he thought he saw some sheep, just a few of them, more like a small cloud than animals. He caught a glimpse of water through the scrub ahead and went up a gully, intending to get a better look. Yes, there was an inland body of water ahead. He trotted back to the trail. Abruptly, 3 pointed stakes jabbed out of cover. He stopped. Very, very slowly, he put up his hands, palms out, to show they were empty of weapons. A guttural, wheezing voice said,
"Take his club. Be swift now."
One spear lowered, and a heavy-set youth with a black beard stepped forward and a bit fearfully yanked the club from Johnny's belt. The youth retreated around behind him and pushed him. The other spears made way.
"Look saucy now,"
the wheezing voice said.
"Then I'll let him run away."
They came to a small clearing, and Johnny looked at them. There were 4, 2 with black hair and dark eyes, a 3rd with blonde hair and blue eyes and taller than the rest, plus an old man who seemed to be in charge. Their dress was partly woven cloth and partly hides. They wore patterned skirts of some rough fabric that fell to their knees. On their heads, they had bonnets.
"It's a thief from the Orkneys,"
said one.
"Nah, I ken Orkney man,"
said another.
"Could be he's a Swede,"
said the blonde one.
"But no Swede dresses so."
"Hush your prattle,"
said the old one.
"Look in his pouch and mayhap you'll find the answer."
Johnny laughed.
"I can give you the answer,"
he said. They recoiled on the defensive. Then a black-haired one crept forward and looked closely into his face.
"He's a Sassenach. Hear the accent."
The old man brushed the speaker aside with impatience.
"No, the Sassenachs be dead these many centuries, except for those already here."
"Let's go down to the village,"
said Johnny.
"I'm a messenger."
"Ha!"
said a black-bearded one.
"Clanargyle, they want to talk of peace."
"No, no, no,"
said the old man.
"You wears no such plaid."
He squared himself off in front of Johnny.
"Messenger ye be from whom?"
"You'll fall over on your backside when I tell you. So let's go down to the village. My message is for your parson or mayor."
"Ah, it's a parson we have. But you'll be meaning chief of the clan, Fergus. Get behind him, you boys, and push him along."